You're listening to AW360, a podcast from Advertising Week. Recorded in studio and live at Advertising Week's global events, AW360 features thought leadership conversations with the best and the brightest in the advertising, marketing, and technologies industries each and every week. If you enjoy AW360, we'd appreciate it if you took the time to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and maybe even leave a positive review. Thanks for listening. Nancy, welcome to AW360. I'm so pleased to have you on today.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
You are Vice President, Consumer Research at 8451. Tell us, for the uninitiated, about 8451 and what you do there.
Yeah. So 8451 is a retail data science, insights, and media company. We are wholly owned by the Kroger Company. So we help the Kroger Company, consumer packaged goods companies, agencies, publishers, partners, et cetera, create a more personalized and valuable experience for shoppers across the path to purchase. So as a whole, that's what we do as a company. We're powered by cutting edge data science. And what that means is we actually leverage first party retail data from nearly one out of every two households in the United States to actually fuel a more consumer centric journey through our 8451 insights, 8451 loyalty marketing, and our retail media advertising solution, Kroger Precision Marketing. So that is 8451, obviously based on our first party retail data asset. In consumer research, we actually refer to ourselves as the why behind the buy. So based on first party retail data, we know what customers are purchasing so that we can create a journey for them that is personalized and beneficial. In my group, we actually understand why they do certain things. So we look at attitudes, we look at perceptions, motivations of customers.
Forgive me if I'm a bit of a novice when it comes to this, but I mean, number one, I want to know why I gravitate towards sugary cereals, but I assume you're probably looking at larger groups than single individuals.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. We actually do qualitative and quantitative data. So we will do small groups to go deep with some customers, some shoppers and consumers. And then oftentimes we will do quantitative data where we're looking at large groups across various targets.
Today, we're really going to talk about a report, a white paper that you've released at 8451 that has some very interesting findings, not the least of which is it reveals that brands are possibly basing major business decisions on fundamentally flawed data. Tell us a little bit about the white paper, this flawed data, and how this came about.
Yeah, so the white paper is actually based on some research on research that we had conducted. And, you know, we had a hypothesis that we wanted to test around what we call behaviorally verified respondents. And what that means, a behaviorally verified respondent is in research would be someone who is selected for research based on a behavior that we know and understand through our transaction data. And we had a hypothesis that we would actually see some benefits from having that respondent base in the research that we do versus what I might call traditional sampling, where respondents are actually self-reporting their behaviors, whether they buy a particular category, particular brand, et cetera. And so within that research on research, we took a look at how those sampling groups compare. And one of the most astonishing findings that we had is we actually saw that those who self-report their behaviors in research actually overstate, they elevate their results by some pretty significant amounts, which could mean that decisions are being made on data that is not reflective of a real buyer or a real person in a piece of research.
Interesting. And let's dive into that point. Can you give an example of one of these areas that maybe they've overreported?
Sure. So within the research, we actually showed respondents concepts within a category that they had purchased. And we saw the results of those concepts. Typically, you would ask somebody, how likely would you be to buy X in the future? And we look at that on a scale. And what we saw was a 14% increase. In that case, it was advertising ratings were 14%. In this case, it was actually a 22% increase in the results among those who self-report their behaviors to screen into a piece of research versus those we had identified through having behaviorally verified respondents. And you can imagine, you know, what that would do if all of a sudden you're looking at research results that you don't know are overstated. You may choose to invest more in a particular new idea or advertising concept or something like that, because the results don't necessarily reflect that of the real buyer of the research, or sorry, real buyer of the product.
Is there any sort of insights as to why people do that? Before we get down to, you know, kind of how you're looking to solve for this, why do people do that, do you think?
Well, I mean, it could be that they don't have enough experience with the product. So if they have, for example, within the research, one of the things that we found for those who self-report, 75% of people in our particular research study, 75% who self-reported their behavior. So did they buy a particular category to be in the research? Should not have been there because we were able to compare that to the behavioral data. So a hypothesis would be that those elevated responses are based on the fact that they just don't have good experience with a particular product to rate it in a way that is reflective.
So if I'm opting in for research, okay, and I'm overstating this stuff, you know, from my end, whether I understand that I'm doing so or not.
Correct.
How do you then course correct across the board? I mean, do you just drop all that reported, you know, self-reporting research and then just put all the eggs over into the other basket, or how does that work?
Well, I think one, you know, we would recommend obviously that, you know, where you can conduct research, where companies and brands can conduct research, if they can have the ability to do that through behaviorally verified samples or behaviorally verified respondents, we would absolutely recommend that because we have seen other factors, which we can get into, where we see differences in quality and we see differences in what consumers can and can't do in terms of their ability to report their behavior. So we would absolutely recommend using behaviorally verified respondents in your sampling. If that isn't possible, then really it would be very, you would want to be looking at your data very cautiously, right? You would want to be looking for anomalies. You would want to be talking to the research vendors that you work with, and you would want to understand how do they select their respondents? What are the quality procedures that they have in place that they know they are talking to a real person and that real person is being attentive within the survey. So I think there's some things that people can do if they can't get to behaviorally verified that can at least try to put a stopgap against some of the challenges that you might see.
I imagine all of this has a very dramatic, almost kind of a snowballing impact along the way towards, you know, any given company's bottom line. Is that a correct assumption?
I think it's a very correct assumption. When you think about decisions that are made based on consumer research, in addition to other business factors, because that always factors in. But even if you take the example that I talked about before with concept testing, again, you may choose to invest in a particular new product based on the results of a concept test, or you may choose to invest in media for an advertisement that you have created. And those may not be sound decisions based on the way consumers might be responding to those in that particular research.
So this touches everything from advertising to perhaps even inventory and the types of products that a Kroger store would put on its shelves.
Absolutely. And the benefit of behavioral targeting, and I think obviously a benefit of 8451 when it comes to research, is we can identify that these are people who have shopped a particular category or have shopped a particular type of product to be able to talk to them and understand, you know, their attitudes, their motivations, their perceptions around that product.
And not to get too granular, but are there areas that you found that these respondents are overstating more so than in other areas?
Absolutely. Good question. And in fact, we find in general, and this research actually told us, that consumers do struggle to remember certain behaviors. You know, even if you think about yourself and when you go to the store and if somebody asked you, how much did you spend a month ago? On cereal, you talked about sugared cereal before, on sugared cereal. And, you know, you might say, oh, I don't know, maybe I spent $5 or $10 over the course of the month. And we know, even in our research, where we were able to compare self-reported versus behaviorally verified, we see overstatement on that. It is very hard for consumers to recall and remember those types of things. And in our particular research, we saw an overstatement of spend from, say, $30 to $6, where they might be, again, stating more than what they actually did spend. So again, sometimes you don't necessarily want to ask a customer or a consumer certain pieces of data if you know it behaviorally, because the behavioral data is an actual purchase versus what they recall. So yes, to answer your question.
So my next question then would be pretty straightforward, I think. Why even worry about respondents, you know, giving you data when you have the behavioral data?
Well, to me, if this answers the question correctly, it goes back to, again, understanding the why behind the buy. So I can say I want to identify a group of heavy buyers of a product because maybe I have a line extension that I am specifically trying to target to heavy buyers of a product. And I'm still interested in those heavy buyers and their opinion of what that line extension might be. But what the respondent or the consumer in general is going to have a hard time determining is, am I a heavy buyer? Am I not a heavy buyer? You know, in the research that we did, we actually found that 60% of people will misclassify themselves based on the volume of purchase that they have. And so what I'm saying is, if you have the ability to identify that heavy buyer through behavioral data, that's the advantage to then go out to them, to that real buyer or real buyer group, and be able to ask them about their attitudes, their motivations, their perceptions of a particular product or particular item. So it's not that it makes sense to continue to do the research. It's in your ability to find those respondents who are real, who have exhibited the behavior, in order to get the strongest results and the most accurate results that you can.
When you look at the data that you get from both sources, do you see any sort of patterns there when it comes to, you know, let's call them buying patterns, where, you know, people are overstating what they might be purchasing from a particular brand versus what they're actually purchasing? Because I always feel that, you know, yeah, the brands I really love, you know, when I go back and think about it, mm-hmm. I probably think I buy a lot more from them than maybe I actually really do.
Absolutely, yes. We do see differences in brand affinity, and in the particular piece of research that we did, we actually asked people, so think about affinity for a retailer, and we asked people about the number of retailers that they shop. And what we saw is, again, those who self-report actually reported 4.6 retailers that they shop. Whereas when we could look at the numbers among our behaviorally verified, we actually saw that number drop to 2.5. Average retailers that they shop. And so I think what you're saying is, when maybe I'm not as familiar with it, or maybe I'm just trying to remember it, you're actually probably remembering higher than what the reality of something might be. So we actually saw that on a couple different metrics across the research that we conducted.
So where I think I'm going to 4.5 different stores, I'm actually not even going to 2.5 different stores.
Correct.
Wow. What are my takeaways from this that I can then go and use? And, you know, let's say I'm a store brand. I'm, you know, a brand of coffee, for example. How can I use this to, you know, better sell to, you know, wanting customers?
So, you know, if I think about, if I'm a coffee brand, you know, and I'm looking at the data that I'm, you know, say Kroger, for example, that I'm, you know, trying to sell into Kroger, I think being confident in that data, knowing that I have actually talked to customers that have shopped at Kroger and have purchased my brand or my product, is going to be so much more powerful as you're having that conversation with the retailer. So, you know, imagine that, you know, you could say, well, you know, we interviewed 100 coffee buyers and they said this. But if I could actually say, well, I interviewed 100 people that I know shopped at Kroger and bought our brand of coffee, and here's what they said, that could make a big difference in that conversation.
One of the things I'm always fascinated about, particularly with a brand as large as Kroger, you have so many different brands within your family. And when it comes to data like this, how difficult is it to, number one, collect all of it and put it all into its various little buckets and then parse it? I got to think that's a very, not insurmountable task, because clearly you're doing it, but what is involved in that? And I realize this is, you know, specifically as it relates to this report, this sounds like a very complex thing to have put together.
Yeah, you know, the research itself, it is complex, but, you know, when we think about what we did, it was actually quite simple. Like we happened to pick just three categories. So we didn't do, you know, I wouldn't say we didn't do a lot. Three categories was a good number. We actually looked at the convenient meals category. We looked at cookies and crackers, like snack multi-packs, and we looked at the oral care, a particular oral care category. You know, so in our case, we looked at in three specific areas. But, you know, when you think about research, and this is different from, you know, the first party retail data that 8451 works in a lot within our data and our sciences. Mm-hmm. We actually are able to, again, understand what buyers do we want to talk to, and then we go out and survey them. So in our case, it's not as complex. You know, in this particular piece of research, like I said, we picked three different categories. You know, we have processes in place where we can go out and survey these respondents, get their answers, and then analyze the results. So this part, not as complex as you might think.
Wow. I don't know. It still sounds complex to me.
Maybe it is. Maybe I've done it for so long, it just doesn't feel as complex anymore. Maybe
entirely possible. I mean, you know, to me, you know, complex is, you know, getting up, scheduling a guest, pressing the record button, and, you know, talking for 15 minutes.
Right.
Nancy, this is incredible stuff. If somebody wanted to obtain this report, I assume it's available?
It is. Yes, we can. We can provide a link to the actual white paper that has been produced. But yes, there are several. There's an infographic as well as a longer white paper that can go through the results that offer not only the results, but then again, some things I talked about before, which are what are some things that you can do to try to safeguard yourself against, you know, some of the findings that we have.
I appreciate you taking time to be on the show today and explain this to somebody who doesn't understand it, but is very fascinated by it.
It is. It's fascinating work. We were excited about the research. So thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to AW360. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing roster of podcasts for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries, including our flagship podcast, Great Minds. You can find those at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts.